I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, Jeffrey made the argument that Cheers' intro song, one of the greatest. Yeah, you said greatest intro song of all TV shows. Are you a fan? Did you watch Cheers? And do you like the intro song?
I endorse that opinion. Like I even sat down and made a list of TV intro songs, so that feels like a correct opinion to me at first blush. I watched Cheers. I'm of the era. Thursday night NBC, Cheers, Cosby Show, Night Court, Family Ties. That was the big four back then. Maybe LA Law was the 9 o'clock show at one point. Like those were the days of sitting in front of the TV on Thursday nights. No, Cheers is great. Cheers got to be one of the great sitcoms ever.
I had it wrong. I was talking about Cheers with, I was explaining Cheers to Gabe yesterday, and I said there was Coach, and then I said Coach was replaced by Woody. That's not true. I didn't realize that. They actually overlapped. Like Kirstie Alley replaced what's her name? The blonde.
Shelley Long.
Shelley Long. That was a replacement, but the other two overlapped, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That was a downgrade, but Coach to Woody with overlap was like, you know, that's a spiritual linkage right there.
Right. That is a spiritual linkage. And I don't favor Coach or Woody. I think they're both were excellent in their own roles. I think Kirstie Alley, yes, was a downgrade. But anyway, all right. MASH was a pretty darn good song for an intro song as well. This is my era, so I submitted that as another possible contender. There you go. Okay. Last night we had, a game that to me, I've been arguing with John Martin for a long time about whether the Grizzlies are on the same tier as the Timberwolves. And they looked like they were on the same tier last night. They go up against the Thunder and all of a sudden they turn the ball over 17 times. They give up 31 points. And they get beat 70-40 in the second half. It looked vaguely reminiscent.
Yeah, I think we'll learn a little bit more as the series goes on. The Wolves got a lot of open threes, semi-open to semi-open threes, and they missed a lot of them last night. But one of the things I think we've talked about before in the show that I think a great insight by the Ringer writer Michael Pena brought up is that teams shoot worse on open threes against the Thunder than anyone else. And his contention, which I buy into, is that that's not accidental. That's also a byproduct of the quality of their defense, that you get guys, teams off rhythm, and even when they get open looks, they shoot more poorly against you because of the quality of your defense. And so is Minnesota going to start making these threes over the course of the series, or are they still going to be missing them because they're playing against the Thunder? And I think that'll be one thing that'll determine how this goes. But, yeah, I thought, you know, the Thunder looked a little shaky to open the game, and then they settled down, and then the defense got going, and that's the best defense in basketball, and it looked like it last night.
I mean, I suspect the Thunder will, you know, they're not going to miss as many threes. I mean, the Timberwolves aren't going to miss as many threes. Naz Reid doesn't go 1 of 11, 0 of 7. That was the most notable, but
they needed my number one thing about the Wolves. I think I said this on the show maybe a couple days ago when Jeffrey was hosting. I think Julius Randle is essential for the Wolves in this series because I think they have so much defense to throw at Anthony Edwards, and the Wolves' offense is shaky enough that they have to really Randle and Gobert, I think, have to be big and assert themselves. And Randle was really good last night, and it still wasn't enough. Gobert was not. And they can't be getting those kind of games from Rudy Gobert in this series. Like, they have to be the more physical team in the paint because they're not going to be the better team on the perimeter. And so they need to be getting rebounds, getting putbacks, being, you know, sort of controlling things in the paint. And Rudy Gobert, I don't know what he had, like 2 points and three rebounds or something.
Rudy Gobert had 2 points, three rebounds. His minutes were, I mean, honestly, they were a limited by foul trouble, but also they didn't use him. Like they decided it wasn't a Rudy Gobert night. So That was interesting. And I don't know what he did in the regular season against them. I don't know what Rudy Gobert's, what he did against
them.
Well,
and most of the Randle damage was he's the guy who did hit threes, right? And so it wasn't like he was dominating in the paint either. And so I just don't know if Minnesota has enough answers offensively for that Thunder defense.
Anthony Edwards he took one shot in the paint yesterday, so last night. Where are you on the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander foul stuff? It's not very appealing, let's be honest. Falling down, drawing fouls. He shot 10 of 27, but he had 11 free throws. And obviously frustrated. I'm not saying officiating was the issue. It clearly wasn't. But where are you on the aesthetic of it and the way that it is officiated?
Well, he does, and this has been a thing that's notable about him, even going back to coming out of Kentucky. He does move differently than most basketball players, and that's part of why he draws fouls, right?
Right.
He has this sort of Caitlin Cooper, right, who writes about the Pacers, had a great line about it on social media last night that it says, said something like, you know, he plays basketball like a slinky. Like he basically moves like a slinky on the basketball court. And that's partly why he draws the foul. It's just because of his unconventional movement and this sort of quality he has. Whether you enjoy watching that or not, it's sort of eye of the beholder. But I think the level of fouls he draws is partly a skill that he has. It's related to how he plays. Do I think he exaggerates stuff sometimes? Do I think he looks for fouls instead of looking to make the shot? Yeah, and do I love that as a basketball fan? No, I'm a very playground rules kind of guy. Like I don't like the idea of drawing the foul being the main thing you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
So I mean, you're trying to make the basket. If you get fouled while trying to make the basket, that's fine. But like, I'm of the school of like you would just assume contact and you're trying to score regardless. So I don't love the like you know the attempt to draw the foul style of basketball, but that is part of the game. You know, this is not the playground. This is a game with three referees with whistles.
Yeah.
And so it is what it is. It's not my favorite. He's not my favorite player to watch,
right.
But he's not my least favorite either. Like I enjoy watching him more than James Harden, who was also a foul baiter.
Right. Well, Jeffrey Reyes looks at Jalen Brunson and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and says, well, maybe Josh should just do that. But the problem is Ja tries to do that, and it does not. He
does.
Like, what
and he gets mad.
Yeah, and then he gets mad. Like, it's weird. It's Ja who gets mad as opposed to the other guys who get mad. Ja gets mad when other people get the fouls, and then he gets mad when he doesn't get the fouls. Is it because he doesn't move like a slinky? Is that the problem? He moves like more like a cross between a rocket ship and a helium balloon?
I actually think Ja does. I'd have to spend some time on this. Maybe it's something I should write about at some point and we're spending time on. I think Ja's foul rate's pretty good. I think it's better than he thinks or better than people think.
Right.
But the other thing is, like, I don't know, man. Do we want Ja taking more contact? like there's no downside to Ja taking contact.
Good point.
But at least it would be contact away from him being vertical. Like, a lot of times this foul baiting's like when the guys are stationary.
No. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the nice thing is he combines drawing the foul with being in the safety of the floor. You know, he does it differently. He's horizontal while he draws the fouls. I guess the hope for Minnesota is we can't be this bad again. We won't miss this many shots again. But it is like Oklahoma City. I haven't looked at their financial situation. I hope there is some sort of looming issue because they just run out so many players. There's Cason Wallace, 7 assists, looking tremendous. Chet Holmgren wasn't even particularly good, like particularly at the beginning of the game. It looked like it was too fast for him or something. And then need him. You need Jaren to be great all the time. You don't need Chet Holmgren to be, you just need him to be great in the fourth quarter when he need a couple of plays and that's enough. It's
like the financial reality is coming for the Thunder, but the bad news is that it's not coming like this summer, right? They still have Holmgren and Jalen Williams on rookie contracts next season.
Yeah. All right. Tonight we got Pacers Knicks. I do believe that will be a fun series. You have a prediction for me on that series, Chris?
Yeah. So my prediction prior to yesterday was Thunder in 6, Knicks in 7. I felt much more strongly about the Thunder winning the West series than I do any outcome of the East series. The Knicks have the home court. The Knicks have. They seemingly have more star power, although you could debate that. Maybe it's just that they're in New York, and so it seems that way. the Pacers are playing great basketball right now. I think the Pacers might maybe playing more consistently at a high level, more consistently so far in the playoffs than maybe any other team, maybe even the Thunder. And I think that's a real toss-up series. I'd be very surprised if it's not a 6 or 7 game series. And I think the Pacers got a real chance to win it. Ultimately, I'm going to go with the Knicks and go with the home court advantage and go with Brunson as a closer and go with all that. But I don't know, man. It's kind of a toss-up to me.
I think it's our best chance to have fun. So I like that. You know, I think
I'm loving it, man. Let's get the Reggie Miller spike. I mean, exactly. this is my nostalgia. This is like I was sitting. I remember sitting on the living room floor watching like Reggie Miller score the you know 9 points in 8 seconds or 8 points in 9 seconds or whatever it was, and making the choke signs at Spike Lee and all of that.
Did the Pacers always have the upper hand in that series? Did it go back and forth? I mean, I remember it as sort of a. But it was
oh, I don't remember.
Second fiddle to the Celtics.
I haven't gone back to look to refresh my memory, but I remember that end of that game. I remember the Miller Lee stuff. I remember them chasing the Bulls and falling short and then finally breaking through and getting to the finals where they lost to the Lakers.
Yeah. All right. So we also had yesterday the news of the all rookie teams. Were announced, and sure enough, no surprise, Zach Edey and Jalen Wells, I guess no surprise, were both on the first team. It's certainly no surprise that they made it. Stephon Castle, Risa Shea, Jalen Wells, Zach Edey, and Alex Saar on the first team. Khalil Ware, Buzelis, Missy Klingon, and Bub Carrington on the second team. Your thoughts about the selections?
I think the Wizards guys got a little bit too much credit for playing time on a terrible team. Like I wrote about this late in the season, so I'm trying to remember what I said. But if I'd had a ballot, I would have had Khalil Ware first team instead of Alex Saar. And then I did not have Bub Carrington second team. I can't remember who I had as the 10th guy. It may have been Kyle Filipowski. But I think Carrington and Saar just got tons of playing time on a really terrible team, and so they got a little inflated based on their like game averages. But generally, I think it was fine.
The others receiving votes high were Isaiah Collier, Kyle Filipowski was next, Ron Holland, the great Dalton Connect, the outrage over passing over Dalton Connect was next, Ryan Dunn, Jared McCain, who obviously might have won had he stayed healthy. Had he continued to play the way that he was playing. It absolutely, though, I mean, everyone is drafted.
I had McCain second team.
Oh, you did?
You didn't have to hit a game number for that, and he was good enough in what he played relative to the competition. I would have gone ahead and put him on our all-rookie team.
I know that it was a down year for rookies, and it has to be looked at that way, but every team was drafting in that same down year for rookies, and the Grizzlies nailed two of them. You have to, yeah. I mean, it is impressive, is it not? I mean, that's impressive.
No, those guys are good. Like, you know, Edey is going to be, I think Edey is going to be a 10-year starter or more in the NBA. And I don't know if Wells could be. Certainly he could be. I think it's more likely he may, you know, get bounced down into a bench role, given other options over the next few years, but like he's a real player, and to find two guys like that at 9 and 39 or whatever it was is very good drafting.
It was a good year to be drafting a center because in addition to the first team, you had literally three centers on the second team. You almost couldn't miss. Like if you were throwing a dart at a center, you almost couldn't miss. In terms of optimism for the Grizzlies next year, is it, if I give you the following categories, one, that they will make significant trades that will improve the team, two, they will have better health, or three, they will have improved years from Zach Edey and Jalen Wells. I'll give you those three reasons why I should be optimistic about the Grizzlies next year. Which is a better reason to believe in next year? Of those three,
I think probably the third. I think, and mostly from the Edey standpoint, I think Edey has a real chance to make a really significant year two step. in terms of, like, you know, A, he'll go into year two, so he's not a rookie anymore. B, he got – and Thomas Isolo talked about this after the season. Like, there was just such a whiplash with Edie. You play one way in college, and then you're brought in, you use a radically different way to start your rookie season, and then that changes, and there's a third different way midway through your rookie season. And he's going to go into the summer with knowing the style of play and knowing that the style of, and having a style of play that is going to be geared in large part to maximizing him, like the style of play that really fits him. He's going to be able to do that from the jump. And I think you combine that with just having gone through the rookie stuff and had the natural progression to year two. I think Edie has a chance to take a major step forward next season.
Neither one will ever get all-star votes. Is that right?
Wells is never going to get all-star votes. Edie, I mean, probably not, but I mean, he's the kind of guy, I mean, you look over the years, like Jared Allen made an
right,
all-star
that's
team.
True.
Jamal Magliore made an all-star team.
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah. And so like that's my pocket example of like the worst all-star, like right. Jamal Magliore made an all-star yeah. team. And so like, you know, I wouldn't rule it out from the Edie standpoint.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.